Welcome to Mum Fessions, the award-winning podcast that helps you navigate motherhood. I'm Laura Guckian, maternal mental health advocate, motherhood coach, founder of Mind Mommy Coaching, and most importantly, mum of three. I'm on a mission to change how we talk about and support maternal mental health. This isn't just another motherhood podcast, because you are my guests. Each week, I'll be sharing your mum fessions, the honest, raw, messy truths mums are often too afraid to say out loud. I'll unpack the guilt, the overwhelm, the rage, and the reality. And I'll give you practical tools to help you move into your happier chapter of motherhood. And this season, I've invited some special guests to help answer your mum fessions, because it takes a village. And this is the emotional village you need. Before we begin, can I ask you to do me a massive favor? Please hit the follow or subscribe button. This will help more mothers to find Mumfessions. Coming up this week.
It's a confession that I'm constantly in this state of uncertainty and self-questioning.
I've actually goosebumps because I've never articulated that out loud.
The confession is that on the inside, I'm constantly riddled with doubt and fear.
Because every other parent was doing it, I had to do it because it was the thing that parents do.
You know what's really interesting? You didn't use the word guilt. So today is a very, very special episode of Mumfessions. You know, I always talk about and advocate for maternal mental health. But one key element of maternal mental health is paternal mental health. And for the very, very first time, I have two dads in studio with me to share their dad Fessions. So I am so excited to welcome Matthew Carter and Lawrence Price, hosts of the Secret Life of Dads podcast. Welcome to Daddy Fessions.
Are we really the first dads? I can't believe this.
Oh my God.
You are the first dads.
Wow. I feel like we really need to set the standard for the dads now.
Yes. Crikey. No pressure.
No pressure,
guys. Thank you so much for having us. This is amazing.
We are going to crack it all over the next hour. And I'm really, really interested to hear we're going to call it Daddy Fessions or Dad Fessions. What should we run with here?
Dad Fessions, I think.
Yeah.
Daddy sounds a bit kinky.
Yeah, that does sound a little bit.
Depends on the Dad Fessions.
I wait with bated breath to hear yours, Matthew.
So we're going to say Dad Fessions, but I'm really, really interested to hear your Dad Fessions today and then get your help in answering one of my audience mum fessions to get that male perspective in terms of how we feel as women and as mums, but also maybe understanding our partners a little bit more, because I will be the first to say, sometimes dads get a lot of slack in the media, in press, in the way they're portrayed. And what I've loved about your podcast is, and we were just speaking about this before we came on to record, it's focusing on dads and kind of putting a different light on that, on what the experience actually is and how you can feel. So who wants to go first with their dad fession?
My dad fession is that I don't have a freaking clue what's going on ever, half the time, even now as I sit here for this podcast. I have no idea. No, I was thinking about this and it's true. Like Matt was saying, we were trying to think of our dad fessions. And at the start, it was like, okay, what is my dad fession? And then all of a sudden they start rolling in and it's like one and then it's two and then it's three and then it's four. But my dad fession is that I sometimes worry that I use work as an avoidance for family time.
Interesting.
I've said it. But I also, because then I'm back and forth between the worry of that, but also being worried pretty much constantly that am I providing enough for my family, therefore being drawn back to the work. So I'm kind of stuck in this vicious cycle where I feel this innate desire to provide and provide security, and that brings me back to my work. And then I'm in this addictive work busy mode, but then that also sometimes becomes, is it just an excuse not to show up more for the family in the ways that I want to? And then I have this inner conflict about I need to overcompensate for that, so I'm going to take the kids out and I'm going to spoil them, and like, oh no, now I'm spoiling them as a dad. And it's this vicious cycle, and it's ultimately all based in this fear of not providing enough for them and not providing security. There, I've said it. It's out in the open. Yeah, have some
I
of that
I relate to that so much.
I think that's really interesting, and my question to that is, when I think of like a mum fession or a dad fession, it's something you're feeling or doing that you feel like you're not supposed to do, that like it's maybe a little bit wrong. Why do you feel that's a dad fession? Because when I'm listening back, I hear I'm a dad, I'm trying to provide for my family, I'm trying to provide financial security or security. What's in your mind, what's bad about that? Or why does that warrant being a dad fession?
So my kids are 8 and 6 now, and all of a sudden I've woken up and I've had this real clear realization that they're growing old, and these days, once they're gone, they're gone. They're gone forever. And I have this deep yearning desire to soak up every single moment that I can with them. But I have this push and pull between wanting to do that, but also being in the busy mode that I've been since the day my daughter was born 8 years ago, about showing up and providing, which has always led me down this path of doing more and doing more. So it's this inner conflict. So I guess it's a confession that I'm constantly in this state of uncertainty and self-questioning. Yeah. And it's all based upon this fear of not showing up for them enough. Yeah. And it's all based on this fear of missing out on these special moments, because once they're gone, they're gone. Once they're 10, 11, 12, they start to get more interested in their friends and they start to spend more time at their friends' houses. You're no longer the sort of the big figurehead in their life, or male figurehead in their life. And I'm just terrified of losing all that, looking back and thinking that I missed all those special moments because I was too head down, too busy working.
But that makes me really sad to hear that, because from where I'm sitting, it feels like, and I don't know if this is where it's coming from, but this pressure, and we talk about this a lot in terms of motherhood, the pressure to do it all, to be it all, to be the mother that's there or the father that's there with their children all the time, that trending music that I hate, which is like, make the most of it, cherish every moment. Mm-hmm. As a father, do you feel that pressure to quote unquote do it all? And what does doing it all mean to you?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that a lot of this is built from wanting to look as though I am in control on the external, and that I do have the right balance between work and family time, and that I do have it all sussed. Whereas the confession is that on the inside, I'm constantly riddled with doubt and fear and frustration around not getting it right, but trying to. So it's this funny thing about human nature. We identify something in our life that we want to change, and instead of tweak it a little bit in order to get ourselves back on track, we tend to overcompensate and go so far the other way. So I feel like this is the year that I'm identifying this as something, an issue that I want to examine and sort out. And I'm in the crux of trying to do that, but in the crux of navigating it and trying to kind of course correct. I'm just, riddled with self-doubt, yet I'm the father. The kids look to me as if I've got it all sorted out. Mm-hmm. And, I have my roles and responsibilities professionally and with the family that everyone assumes I've got it all figured out. But inside, I really don't have that self-doubt.
Just a small child still.
Just a small child thinking, crikey, I really want to make sure that I get this right for them and that I experience it all and that I don't miss it.
Yeah. Do you know what's really interesting? You didn't use the word guilt. You said, I fear and self-doubt. Mm. Do you feel guilt? Or in your mind, what's the difference between guilt and self-doubt and fear?
Yeah, I think I've tried to become mindful of falling down these rabbit holes of guilt and the story that we can tell ourselves. Yeah. And I've tried to orientate myself into a way of acceptance that this is the stage of our life where everything feels messy. And we've almost done the maths on this in terms of looking at how it could all possibly fit in. And we've spoken to countless experts about this over the last year and a half. And I think the general consensus is that there is no way that this is all perfect, going to fit and going to work. Yeah. It's going to be messy. We just have to navigate that. The messiness, if we instead of forming self-guilt around not understanding and having that crystal clarity about where we are, but instead have that acceptance that part of the juice and the beauty of life is that it's messy and that you have to navigate it, then it reframes it as just part of the journey. And so this is just part of the journey that I'm on at the moment.
No, I love that you've explained it like that, because when I hear mothers talk about that same feeling, the first word they use is guilt of I'm doing something wrong, I'm not doing enough, or shame. Whereas I love the perspective you've taken of, it's not necessarily that I feel like I'm doing anything wrong. I just want something to be a little bit different, but also recognizing there the mess and the chaos of this stage of life when we have young kids, there's no such thing as balance. Like, that doesn't really exist. And what I love about what you're saying there is the recognition of what you are doing. Like, you are providing for your family financially, which is a key need and something that is actually supporting your children. But I think at times there's this narrative as mums and dads that our children have lots of different needs, like the need for financial security, the need for education, safety, all of these things. But the thing that we feel like we might be failing in or not doing enough is that quality time or cherishing every moment. But actually,
that's one part of many of their needs. Does that make sense in a way? That's the one as parents, we're constantly like, oh, am I here enough? Am I doing enough? Like I was leaving yesterday morning to fly here to London and my 9-year-old was literally crying out the window and I was driving away and I don't feel guilt anymore because I was like, he's okay. He's with his dad. I'm going to London to do a job I love and it makes me happier. But I had to do a lot of work to get there. If that was a few years ago, I would have been like, I'm the worst mother in the world. My child is crying. Yeah. Instead, I was like, I'm going to London. I have a job I love. It's amazing. I'll see them Friday. So I just think that's really interesting, your perspective. And I think for any mother listening, take from that, like, it's not that we're doing anything wrong. It's just we're trying to do so much and it's not going to come together.
Exactly. And we are at this time kind of caught between eras in many ways. We're in this transition era between what was the old fashioned way of doing things and then the more progressive way of wanting to do things. And constantly in our minds, we're going to be digesting information or exposed to information that's in one or the other. We're kind of caught in between. So I think cutting ourselves a little bit of slack and seeing parenthood as a bit of an adventure, something to explore with curiosity, is a beautiful way to do it.
It's kind of one of the themes that's come up in the podcast a lot, the sense of identity and the sense of identity shift. I think we are the last generation of parents who saw our fathers probably go out, work 9 to 5, mum would have a role in the house. And now there's a huge identity shift. And I think a lot of dads, just like a lot of mums, feel lost in the sense that they don't know if they're the provider. They don't know that, well, they're trying to be the provider. They're trying to be the stay-at-home parent. They're trying to, and everything just feels muddled and messy. And in the thousands and thousands of years of evolution, we're the first generations of parents who are trying to understand more about these roles. And it can feel, can I swear?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Fucking overwhelming. Yeah. Like massively overwhelming. It's why I had a mental health crisis the first year of having my child. It's why we set up the podcast, because we felt like the conversations weren't there. And it's so easy to feel lost and abandoned and the sense of identity in parenthood. It's really, really hard and challenging. Yeah.
I can really relate to what you're saying. I always say it's the hardest time to be a mother, but and a dad, because I think what you're speaking to there is the clarity and the structure isn't really there. Like in one hand, we are the generation that's going, there's another way to do it, equality, I don't want to do it this way. But we're also the first generation that have access to experts at our fingertips that may or may not suit the way we want to raise our children. We have access to how every other family is doing it online. We have the access to the perfect mother or the perfect father. And I think in ways it can be helpful, but in other ways it's adding this massive pressure. And we're left there going, what do I do? How do I do this? I'm not sure. I'm trying to, as I always say, rewrite the rule book. And that's hard. It's really, really hard. You mentioned there, Matt, and I'm not sure if that's your dad fashion, that you struggled with your mental health. As a dad, is that something you want to talk about today? Is that your dad fashion?
Should I give you my, it's not my dad fashion.
Okay.
So my dad fashion, I was trying to think of this in a way that isn't sinister or malevolent in any way, but I look forward to when my friends who have kids, I look forward to when they're going to struggle. Okay, now let me try and unpack this, because I found the first year so challenging that I felt like I was the only person going through that struggle. And then when I saw the photos online of people where they have the child for the first time, it's all happy families. And then that's the projection online. But the reality is very, very different. So my dad fashion is that I look forward to the struggle so that I can have the conversations with them about my own personal struggles, the struggles I've had on my journey. And I feel like I get so much more from sharing the hardships of parenthood than the gloss that's on Instagram.
Oh my God, I actually emotional as you're saying that. That would probably be my mom fashion too. And I can understand what you're saying. Yeah. I actually understand it. It's this sense of, and like you, I really struggled in my first year of motherhood and I couldn't see anyone that looked like me. And everyone was saying, this is the best time of your life and it's amazing. And I was like, what's wrong with us? That this is actually the worst time of our life, to the point where if people said they were pregnant, instead of me saying congratulations, I'd be thinking, oh God, I don't want that for you because it's going to be so hard. And I can relate to what you're saying. Not that I ever want anyone to find it as hard as I did, but there's a sense of feeling seen and going, connection. Oh, it wasn't just me. I can connect with you now. You understand it. And like, I actually like, I've actually goosebumps because I've never articulated that out loud. And what is it about seeing a friend or someone that might be struggling to you that's like, is it the permission to finally say, yeah, that's the part I really struggled with? Is it, or is it the piece of, well, if they're now finding it hard, it wasn't just me, like I wasn't doing anything wrong.
Yeah, there is a bit of that. I think we're kind of taught, aren't we? And we're fed that when you become a parent, it's going to be this idyllic rainbows, unicorns in hospital, everything's going to be perfect. And because I was the first out of all my friends to have, to become a dad as well.
Yep.
So I didn't really have a sense, I hadn't spent much time with children, and I was a bit unaware. And then when it did happen, it felt like a tsunami, really. And I experienced all these new and raw emotions that I'd never experienced before. And I immediately thought, right, there is something wrong with me. Yeah. There's something. I didn't have the emotional vocabulary to be able to discuss this with my friends. I didn't have it to discuss it with my wife. And I did probably what 99% of men do, is just I press it down into a little ball in my stomach. Then eventually that poured over in other ways in postnatal depression for me, is what it was.
Yeah. This is so interesting to talk about, Matt, because I think men don't talk about this. and obviously everything I do is about maternal mental health, but of course it's hard for men too. Like, we all become parents. Yeah. And as you describe it there, it is literally a tsunami into your life. Mm. For some, that can be an amazing tsunami. For others, like you and I, it's like, what just happened? This doesn't feel good. This feels really hard. I can't put words in it. I can't describe it, because we're told this is the best stage of our life. Mm-hmm. And as a man, was there extra pressure on you to not speak about that? Was that even a level harder?
Yeah, definitely. I think because when you become a parent for the first time, it's, you know, you and your partner, you're so close. You know, you've probably just been married and it's the happiest moment of your life, right? And then you're so close, you're so tight. And then you have the child and then you kind of move out of the circle. So it's the mum and the baby and you feel a bit lost and you don't know where your place is. And that's how I felt. And looking back now, I wish I could have been more supportive to my wife, because I was just very much like, well, I'm not needed here. I feel useless, a bit of a spare part. So I found that really tough to communicate as well, because it's not something you're taught, that emotional vocabulary. It's something we've discussed on the podcast before, is I think why men find it so, or dads find it so tough to talk about it, is just because we teach our kids, you know, are you feeling angry today? What big emotions are you having? We didn't have any of that in school. So how we're trying to, you know, discuss that with our children, but we don't have the vocabulary ourselves, I think is really, really hard, and it's really challenging. And the immediate thing that you could do is probably say that there's something wrong with you. And that's what I fed myself a narrative of constantly saying, there's got to be something wrong with me. There's got to be something wrong with me. And I'd wake up every day and I'd tell myself that story. And then the anxiousness developed from that. And then postnatal depressive state developed from that. And it's scary what can happen if you're speaking to yourself in that negative framework all the time.
Yeah.
And I think there's probably so many dads going through it. You don't have to. It took me a year and a half to tell Lawrence, who's my best mate. Like we went on holidays and stuff.
Was he the first person you told?
Face to face, apart from my wife. Face to face he was.
Wow. Yeah. So for a full year and a half. And what did it feel like? And the reason I ask this is, before I struggled with my mental health as a mum, you know, I heard words like postnatal depression and you're going to be really down and you're going to be really sad. And it wasn't like that for me. I was the opposite. I was like an energizer bunny. I was trying deeply to take back control, to get routine back. Like if someone looked at me, they'd be like, she's high energy. I wasn't feeling sad. Mm-hmm. And that added more confusion, because I was like, well, I don't even fit the bill of like postnatal depression. Mm-hmm. So as a man, and for your experience, did you feel sad? Did you feel angry? Like, when you woke up in the morning, like I always describe, I would wake up in the morning and the feeling of having to lift the duvet off me was like bricks. Like it was this immense fear of, I don't know how I'm going to get through the day. This feels horrendous. Can you relate to any of that feeling?
I was so conscious within the first 6 months of just time standing still. I think having to spend, like, I really didn't enjoy going to the fucking toddler classes and the groups, and I just didn't enjoy them. And there was this kind of this forced sense of, you've got to go here and everything's got to be really, and for some reason for me, I just couldn't connect with them. I found them really hard. I just felt like I was out of place, and because I'm self-employed as well, a lot of the time I was kind of the only dad there, and it just felt a bit like clicky, and it just, it, I don't know. I couldn't take anything from it.
I don't think that was you. And can I just say, I'll get in trouble. I think those toddler and baby groups can be some of the most toxic.
Oh, that's good to know. Not just me then.
I found them incredible. Maybe I didn't find my group, and disclaimer, I'm sure there's lovely ones out there. I remember walking in and just being like, this feels like school times 10. Yeah. I don't feel I belong here.
I felt a sense that because my partner was doing it, because every other parent was doing it, I had to do it because it was the thing that parents do.
Then the, like, singing, yeah, and you're like,
totally. If I got to sing about another pink monkey again, I'm going to lose my mind.
I'm not okay.
But
here.
Yeah, and I think, like, a kind of message to dads as well. If you find something that works for you, like mine, I live kind of like Wimbledon Common way. Because mine was always just taking my daughter up there, and I used to love it. But I always had this sense that I couldn't go and do that because I had to go to another class or do something like that. But yeah, I didn't particularly enjoy the groups and doing those things and doing the things that you're supposed to enjoy doing. Like, forced fun for me was a part of it. I would push that away.
I don't think they're fun. We're going to get in trouble. They're not.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are some. There are. I don't know what your experience is.
How about when you were just going about your day-to-day business as a dad and you were experiencing the postnatal depression? What was your energy that you were feeling and experiencing then?
I think just a constant sense of weight, which I think a lot of parents go through, but this constant sense of, I'm trying to provide, but I'm also trying to figure this father role out, which I have no idea which I'm doing. And I feel it really overwhelming, but I don't have the emotional vocabulary to talk about it. So I'm going to hide it and I'm going to overcompensate.
Yeah.
What did overcompensating look like?
I would laugh more. I would make jokes at things, which I think is a bit of it's a big thing.
Basically, when he told me, a year and a half in, we went out for dinner, in my head, I was meeting up with Matt, who has been the life and soul for the last year and a half. I was like, wow, this guy's on fire. I've known him for 10 odd years and he's like the most energetic I've ever seen him. I'm like, what's his secret? But of course, we sat down, we had this in-depth conversation, and it turns out that knowingly or unknowingly, that was a massive mechanism in which he was just overcompensating for the heavy feelings and emotions that he was having day to day. And it was just, to me, one of these wow moments of, oh my gosh, if that can happen to someone so close to me, my best mate, I had no idea that he was going through this depressive state. It's just another huge indicator that for any dads out there, you know, or mums listening, the men in your life, even if they seem really, really jovial and high energy, always check in, because there can be something happening below the surface that they are masking and that they're hiding through humor, which is the way Matt did it.
And that's why I said, what did it look like as overcompensating? Because it's almost like you went the opposite direction to convince people, I'm loving this.
Convince myself.
Or convince yourself. Yeah. And how did that conversation go? Like, did you know you were going to share with?
Yeah, I think I was really, because I went to therapy because, you know, so the first year, I'm sure you're aware, you and your partner, unless you communicate, we are very much like passing ships in the night.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, your shift, okay, I go do my 30 minutes of workout, I get a bit of work done, and then you go and do your thing. So I did therapy, and the therapist said, I want you to go and ask your wife what it's like to live with you, which is a question that probably saved our marriage. And I challenge anybody to do it, because I've actually had a few friends who have heard me say that before.
That's a hard thing to ask, isn't
like,
it?
To really say, that's what's it like to live with me? And it opened the floodgates. And I actually kind of felt, and I've said this before, that was the first time where I felt our marriage actually began. It wasn't the amazing moment where Lawrence actually married my wife and I. It wasn't then. It was.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Did you marry them?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he was a celebrant. So yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You were beyond friends, really.
Yeah.
And Matt's the godfather to my son. So, you know, we're very close. We've been on holiday when you were going through this period.
Well, that's it. We were in, we were on holiday, and it was probably through the period where I was really struggling.
And still had no idea.
Yeah.
So, when you had this conversation with your wife, was this prior to telling Lawrence you were struggling? When you said, what's it like?
Yeah.
And if you don't mind sharing it, you don't have to. What was her response to that? Was it a response that was easy to hear?
Or? Yeah. I mean, so her response was that I can't see myself having another baby with you. Yeah.
Wow.
Which was a real, and then I said, I can't imagine life without you. And it unlocked something in me to go and do the further work and understand more about myself. But I think so many It was so hard. I remember coming back with I was on a Lion bike, and I remember just the cycle back felt so long. But it's such a challenging question. I'm so glad I did it, but it was really tough and challenging at the time.
God, like so many of the things you're saying, Matt, I don't mean to laugh. Yeah. Like I can relate to, and I that's why I'm so glad I brought you on, that whether you're a mom or a dad, we might have different experiences, but I think that core feeling is the same, where it's just, it's so hard. And like me saying to you, what does it feel like? There's never words you can put on that to describe it. And you keep saying, it was just hard, Laura, it was just hard.
And I think, you know, sometimes so much of the internet puts mums and dads against each other.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes people are like, you know, dads they don't fucking communicate. And then mums are, they talk too much. And I think it's just, we're different. We're different in how we've been taught. You know, the education system, it's been different. It's been, we communicate in a different way. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes just having a sense of empathy towards that and just being able to listen.
Yeah.
Like just ask a big question like that, what's it like to live with me? And then being able to listen without judgment. I think so many more men would come forward and talk about it.
I might ask my husband that when I go home. I don't
let me know how you get on.
I think that's another coping mechanism as well, though. We got the hiding ourselves in humor and overcompensating. Yeah. But the other coping mechanism is just throwing ourselves into our work, because it's far easier than
like you did.
Well, and it's far easier than confronting like you did. Far easier just to walk away from it sometimes and just say, I'm just in the office longer hours. I'm just this. I'm just, and it is a coping mechanism. And sometimes, I don't know, but from the other side, that can look like, you know, the partner, the male, the dad is away a lot and they're sort of doing all these other things. It might be a signal that they're struggling as well. So if you can find a way to have that confronting moment as well, just to ask each other these kind of hard questions.
And that's something I want to touch on that before I ask you about what your conversation was like when you finally shared how you were feeling. But on that note, something I'm observing from what you're both saying, right? So as a woman, when I describe I'm struggling, I'll be like, I'm feeling guilty. I'm not enjoying every moment. I'm not the perfect mother. But what I'm hearing from you two is this theme of providing. So you said it there, Lawrence, in your mum fashion or your dad fashion, in terms of, you know, I'm out providing, right? You said then as a new dad, Matt, I was struggling going, I'm not providing? Am I doing it right? Am I supporting my wife enough? And it's a theme that has never come up when I'm talking to mums. So that theme of providing, like, it's just really interesting. And it's leading to that point there. You're saying dads can maybe throw themselves into work, into that, you know, stereotypical, the man is the hunter-gatherer and provider. But it's just really interesting. It has never come up in any conversation I've had with a woman.
Well, in the first 6 months, like Matt was saying earlier, or more, you are outside of that circle and you struggle to find your value in a situation.
Yeah.
So if you can find your value in your work somehow, for me, that was a way of like, right, actually, this is where I provide value to this situation, to this family. That's where I pour all my energy. And that's why I ended up, with chronic anxiety and the rest of it. But they're just different ways in which we are. And then we can get caught in that cycle of thinking, okay, that's how I add value. And then years go by and you're still thinking, okay, this is how I add value. They're far more subtle ways where we drop the work, we drop the doing, we drop that kind of masculine type energy, and we can adopt a tender, more sensitive type energy in our homes and add value that way. But sometimes it takes a moment of realization to get there.
It's really interesting because we were kind of briefly talking about it there before we started recording. It's like, as women, if we are the quote unquote, the providers, if we have the career, there's guilt of you're not with your children all the time, right? It can be seen as a negative thing. But from a male perspective, if you are the provider, it's almost celebrated. And there's these two conflicting narratives that if a mother is the provider, she's not a good mother. She's not present. She's not at home with them. But if a dad does it, he's celebrated. And equally, if a dad steps into the role of the nurturer, you know, being working in the home, maybe when your partner is out being the provider, then that has potentially a negative narrative as well. Like, we can't win. No. This is the challenge. No matter what we do as parents, we can't win. And as men and women, we're battling these narratives. When actually, as you said there earlier, Matt, like, or was it you, Lawrence? Like, there's no right or wrong way. It's about what's right for you and your family. And it's just so interesting how it's so refreshing to hear your perspective. If you're like, well, it was a bad thing because I wasn't providing. Whereas a mother is like, well, it's a bad thing because I have to go back to work outside the home. It's so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. I think it's, again, we spoke about this with one of our guests the other week. There's been no male nurses or an increase in male nurses since the 80s. Mm. If dads are to stay at home and be, you know, the mum role, yeah. It's kind of, it's a bit like, oh, why are you doing that?
There's been no progress in that mindset at all.
Which we're hoping to change.
Like, definitely. Yeah. And I think part of the work you're doing with your podcast is opening up that and challenging the roles of parents. Mm. And I think that is part of the challenge when we talk about like getting deep here, but like equality in the workplace and all of that, like the structure in society is not set up for fathers to take on that role in the home. It's set up for mothers. And, you know, in many families, sometimes that's not the right dynamic and it leads to conflict and am I doing enough here? Am I doing enough there? And it's really, really fascinating.
Well, paternity leave is the lowest in the UK out of the whole of Europe. And then even in companies, international companies that extend it, they've found that dads don't take it because it's culturally not accepted. Mm-hmm. So clearly, again, the mindset is just stuck.
Yeah, we spoke with a guy called Alex who set up a company called The Dad Shift, and it's all about changing the narrative about paternity leave in the UK is the worst in Europe. I think it's like £180 a week and you get 2 weeks.
Wow.
And if you're self-employed, you get absolutely nothing. And the impact of that has not just on the baby, but the relationship as well is absolutely huge. So just doing something as simple as that, and dads are now spending three times more the amount of time with their kids as previous generations as well. Like it's incredible, but the system isn't set up for it.
The system isn't set up. I think is it in Sweden, they get something like 2 years. I might be quoting this wrong, but it's shared with both parents.
Yes, I think you're
how
right.
How amazing is that?
Yeah.
How amazing. Yeah.
Just a sense that you're covered and then you can connect, because I think because I was self-employed, it was very much like, okay, child is here, but I've still got to kind of go out and work.
And I'm still trying to catch up with the fact that I'm now a dad.
That's it. Yeah. And what we've understood as well, that dads go through just as big a hormonal shift as women do.
And in many ways, it's meant to sort of make us more caring and nurturing and less kind of out there, you know, running around with our spear. I still do that.
With our spear.
We need to get a reel of that.
Yeah.
But it, I don't know if you want that. Yeah.
But it also, you know, it can also make us less resilient in terms of the hormonal setup. And so we are easy. We're stressed easier. We're more prone to, you know, anxiety and all that sort of. So if we have awareness around that, then how can we adapt our lifestyle or our work-life balance or whatever the circumstances might be to actually get the best out of us as dads so that we can give the best of ourselves to our families. Yeah.
I actually feel so much empathy for dads now. Please don't give out to me, everyone. But just briefly, I would love to talk about that conversation you guys had. You said you met for dinner. You'd been struggling, Matt, for a year and a half at this stage. Had you told your wife this or was it just your therapist? Did anyone know?
Yeah, so my wife knew. I don't know if I'd told my immediate family yet. I'm very close to my brother. I hadn't spoken to him yet because he's further away. So Lawrence is probably one of the first people that I spoke. I remember we were in Shepherd's Bush, weren't we? I remember it. And I remember feeling nervous about the words, just finding again the emotional vocabulary. I said to him outright that I found it really hard to connect with my daughter. I was expecting to have this sense of just pure love and affection and joy, and I didn't have it. And I felt like there was something wrong with me, and that came out in quite an anxious, depressive state. And then the podcast basically kind of started through that. For me, it was like a form of therapy through you. And I was like, let's pick at this fatherhood stuff. Let's try and understand a little bit more about what's going on. And then we opened a can of worms, and it's, I guess we found out how little we really know as what's happening.
It's amazing when you launch a podcast, you actually get the privilege of speaking to experts that you would never have access to. So we've just been on this personal growth journey as dads ever since and kind of leveled up all the way from there. But, you know, again, it all came from the beautiful gift of that challenge being fatherhood. So we have a lot to thank fatherhood.
But Lawrence was so good in that moment. And any advice to maybe dads who are struggling with that? Just listen. Just, you know, you've got two ears and one mouth for a reason. Just listen. I think sometimes you want to project and put your own, you know, perspectives or whatever, your opinions on something. I think the best thing that you can do if somebody is struggling, just be there to listen for them.
Particularly as men, we want to fix everything.
Yeah.
It's this urge to sort of say, okay, well, this is what we're going to do to fix it. But I just think if we can move away from that approach and always say, just hold space with love and compassion and just to to get everything out in the open so you can start the process of processing and orientating yourself.
And it's okay. Like now I look back and I wish I would have been kinder to myself and just thought, it's okay that it's going to be really messy and it's okay that you're going to lose the old you and it's okay that there's a new relationship that's going to come out of your marriage or partnership, whatever it might be. But that's, it's a testing phase. It's a really testing phase.
And you know what I love about what you've shared there? And I think, you know, when I relate back to, and my husband is so private, he'll kill me for saying this, but I'm not even allowed to put pictures of him on Instagram. Yeah, yeah. But like, I remember when I was sharing with him my struggle, and maybe it's back to that provider thing you're talking about, the fixer, the security. His response was always, I don't know, like, what can I do? I don't know how to fix this. What can I do? And I would be trying to communicate, I don't want you to fix it. I just want you to hear me. And I think you've really touched on that there, that like your deep friendship, when you shared it, I don't think you were looking for Lawrence to fix it. You just wanted him to hear it and for you to go, I've said it out loud. And I think sometimes in relationships, when we become parents, there is that thing of whether it's your wife sharing with you or your husband or your partner, there can be that kind of desire to fix it, to help them. And the best way you can help them is just go, I hear you.
Well, that's it. Imagine walking around everywhere with this invisible weight that just sits on you. It's on your shoulders. For me, it's sat on my stomach. And having these conversations, it just lifts the weight off a little bit each time that you do it. And then it gets further away from your body and you're able to just understand a little bit more and unravel the thread and pick patterns and see how you can not necessarily fix things, but look at things through a different light. This idea that you've got to fix and be your old self again, I think is nonsense when you become a parent, because you go on this incredible journey of growth and understanding and also understanding the frailties. I think parenting has done that to me.
Oh, yeah.
It's uncovered the work that I think this sometimes, would I have just gone through life without uncovering the rawness inside me and the work that needed to be done. And I'm so grateful for parenting for do that because, I mean, it's a challenge.
It's a challenge.
Yeah.
And one point I want to kind of talk about before we go into the audience mom fashion or dad fashion. Well, no, it's a mom fashion. It's that piece you mentioned there as well, Matt, of, you know, I didn't have that instant bond. I think you were saying that. And I always look at it. I think that's such a damaging narrative of you'll have your child and it'll be a love like no other and this instant gush of love. But if you think of any other meaningful relationship in your life, like even your friendship.
That was straight away.
But
no, it's so true.
You know, with your partner, like it takes time. Like a great relationship in your life is built on time and growing But yet, we're expected that this tiny person is handed to us and we're like, best relationship ever.
You will love this thing
that's screaming and crying and keeps you awake. And I really wish we could reposition.
When you put it like that.
Any of our other relationships started and we the dating stage or with your friends, we're having fun. I really wish we could shift that narrative. It's not instant love for some. It takes time and you have to get to know your child. And then the relationship with your partner, well, that is going to change.
I feel like, because my son's 6 now and my daughter's 8, and it's just we're entering into a different era. Yeah. And I feel like now I'm starting to get to know them for who they are. Obviously, I've known them and I've seen them develop and grow. But
I have been there.
Yeah. It's those weird moments where that weren't necessarily happening before with my son, where we'll be having a conversation, we'll catch each other's eye and we'll laugh about something that's happened. But I'm not like entertaining him like a sort of toddler, you know, trying to keep him, you know, or that we have a connection. It's like we're connecting on a whole different level because we've built something's going on here and I can feel this deeper relationship, this father-son relationship going. But 6 years in. Six years.
And I can relate to that. I think my kids now are 9, 5, and 4. I feel like I'm only starting to enjoy it now. Mm. And my son, my 9-year-old, I think, and again, and we'll move on to the mum fashion now, but I think it's worth saying because I don't know if you can relate to this, Matt. Mm. I always had this massive guilt of you didn't bond with him because you struggled with your mental health. You didn't bond. And like, I actually had a psychologist saying that to me, like jokes on her, because he's now 9. And I would say out of all my children, we have the strongest bond. Mm. Like, because our first year together was so bloody tough.
Yeah.
Like so tough. And it's kind of, I will always look at him slightly different and he is a little version of me and we clash and, you know, but I do look at him now as a 9-year-old and I'm like, oh my God, like the bond was always there. I bonded with you in a much deeper way than I ever will with my other two. Because we were true. Can you relate to that?
Yeah, it really takes time. One of the other dad fashions that I was thinking in my head was that before the age of four, I think my daughter's just turned four. And one of mine was that I used to hate going on holiday just because... my wife was like, but I really didn't used to enjoy it just because we really struggled with her sleep. And I just knew we had a bit of a routine. We were supposed to go away and have forced fun and it would get hot and we'd be screaming. And I used to really just, I didn't enjoy the prospect of going on holiday. I feel there's so much pressure on parents. Like, go away. You will enjoy this holiday. We've spent a lot of money on this holiday. You will
enjoy it.
Everyone smile, take a photo for the camera. But you're just paying to have a tantrum in a different country.
Yeah. Oh, man. I think we're the same person.
Yeah.
I bring my kids on holiday.
Yeah.
I brought him. Leo and my husband and I went on holidays when he was about a year and a half. And my mum was like, are you sure? I'm like, why not? Everyone does it. We've gone on staycations in Ireland. I am not up for the challenge of having that level of stress in another country and paying thousands for it. Mm. No, thank you. I'll do it when they're older.
Yeah. Have you seen this like trend that's going around now where mums are clocking how many times they're asked... the kids use the word mummy in a day.
Oh, really?
And it's like they click it, they click. And by the end of the day, it was like 190 times this mum.
I'm sat next to my kids on the sofa and they'll go, mummy, can I have some water? And I'm sat next to them. It's so inbuilt in them. What does your partner say? Well, and then we look at each other and I have to say, darling, I'm sat right next to you. You know, you can ask me, you know, and it's just a kind of...
Who are you?
Oh, sorry, I know. Sorry, I thought you said, mummy, can I have a glass of water? Okay, that makes total sense.
I mean, that might make the most of it whilst you're there. No, so they're just so automatic to say, mummy.
To mummy.
If it's something they need, even if I'm sat right next to them.
It's so true. I was leaving my kids there to come to London. I was putting my little girl to sleep and I was like, you know, and daddy will be minding you while we're gone. And she was like, but daddy makes the brown stuff. I was like, what is she talking about? And I was like, she doesn't want you to cook the brown stuff. What? And he was like, oh, I made the mince one evening, like a chili thing. And she was like, I don't want the brown stuff.
Yeah. Do you know what's so funny as well? Not another dad fashion, but kind of. I find parenting so much easier when it's just me and my daughter rather than my wife and my daughter, just because I'm quite regimented with routines and structure. Yeah. Bath time, bedtime, bang, 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 go. There's always just like chaos and stuff. And I think that's, you know, playing up to mummy. But I've definitely in the first 4 years found parenting quite a lot easier when it's just my daughter and I.
Yeah, it's the control piece.
Yeah.
It's that you've control. Mm-hmm. Shall we answer a mum fashion? Will you help
us
with that?
Yes, let's do it. Yes,
absolutely.
Over 80% of you told me that scrolling on social media makes you feel like you're failing as a mother. We are the first generation of mothers who have access to social media. At our fingertips, we are being shown images of perfect motherhood and how a mother should feel every minute of the day. The thing is, social media can't meet you where you are at. It doesn't do justice to the grey areas of motherhood. That's why I created The Village. It's a space off the scroll, away from the noise, and it's built to meet you exactly where you are. I'm offering all Mum Fashions listeners 30 days of free access to The Village. Click the link in the description below for immediate free access. I can't wait to support you there.
My Mum Fashion is that I think I'm starting to resent my husband. Actually, if I'm being completely honest, I think I'm starting to hate him. I really, really struggled with my mental health, and instead of supporting me, it felt like he just got angrier. Anytime I was struggling, his reaction wasn't concern, it was frustration. He never asked if I was okay, he just got mad. Yes, he's the main breadwinner, and I appreciate that because it's meant I could step back from work, but I'm so sick of carrying the load alone. He's now entering his hot dad era, going to the gym and taking care of himself, and I'm stuck at home, drowning in motherhood. Why does he get to thrive while I feel like I'm simply surviving?
I'm going to throw it out here. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's in his hot dad era. I think he's in his struggling dad era. What do you think?
It sounds like... I don't know these people and this is not judgment upon them, but a similar scenario would sound like an avoidant mm-hmm. situation for the man. And it's a very avoidant thing to get angry if you're struggling yourself and you're unable to deal with the extra load that someone else is putting upon you, you know, from their point of view. Instead of having the capacity, maybe he's already at his threshold. And maybe another coping mechanism is for him to go to the gym and to manage that stress and the energy that he's feeling, coupled with the fact that depending on his headspace, he could be thinking, the more I work on myself, the more powerfully I show up for the roles and responsibilities in my life. Therefore, if I really look after myself, my fitness and my health, I'll be more energetic at work and I'm fulfilling my role. And it could be a little bit of framing, reframing kind of going on with that as well. That's my take.
Yeah, I can relate to that from personal experience when I didn't have the emotional vocabulary to be able to speak to my wife about the struggles that I was going through. I lost myself through doing triathlons and signing up for marathons and any form of escape just because I couldn't confront the demons that I had. We had a guest on recently called Sam Parker, who wrote a book about, it's called Good Anger, and it's all about the suppression of anger. And I think that's something as a parent, you find anger and like anger is a whole different emotion when you become a parent. And so much of it as dads to feel like, don't show any emotion, don't show, you know, be this robot parent all the time. And I think a lot of struggles come through that for me, just being able to get that anger out, be it pounding the treadmill or going to the gym and getting the weights out. For me, it was a way of just calming my nervous system. So it's difficult having those conversations, but I think to see the other side of it, how Lawrence put it so well, is that maybe it's his coping mechanism.
Yeah.
It's a way that he's struggling himself. He's just doing it through physical movement or whatever.
This is so refreshing to hear because, and I'm so glad I got you guys on to hear this male perspective, because I think that is what happens when we're in relationships, and particularly, how do I say this without getting in trouble? Because everything I do is about maternal mental health, but there is the perception of, oh, well, if the dad is going to the gym and he's back at his career and he's fine, what about me? And sometimes, yes, that is valid, but sometimes you're just both struggling and it's about coming together and going, I'm finding it hard. Are you finding it hard? How can we work together as a team to make this better? Like, I'm frustrated that you're getting to go to the gym. That might lead him to go, well, I'm only going because I'm actually feeling this, this, or this.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I think so much of it in society and media has become a competition between the mother and father. And there's these narratives that are unhelpful. At the end of the day, it's just a family in a relationship. And maybe the key here is to communicate it and say, look, I'm feeling this because you're getting to do this. I'm holding this resentment. I want to do this that you're doing and I can't. Like, can you relate to that in a way?
The amount of times we've had these conversations, particularly with experts, and we've had this conversation about communication, about exactly that, and not framing it as you versus me or I'm trying to make you wrong, but framing it as a team, working together as a team as much as possible. And I think that that word compassion again and holding space, as couples in relationships, if we can get to the point where we can hold space in a non-judgmental, compassionate way and just listen, not try to fix the other person, straight away that information has a dissolving effect for a lot of the assumptions we're making or the stories we're making about them and what I can deal with or what I can't deal with.
Yeah.
And then through that almost diffusion, you can have the communication which actually binds you together and connects you as a couple and makes you strong. Because that's, I think, what it all comes down to, is trying to stop operating as individuals against each other, trying to make each other wrong and try to bring down the walls and connect so that you can be a better...
Yeah, and again, just picking... Do you know Lisa McFarlane, the emotional coach?
I love Lisa. So I know Lisa.
She came on and she was amazing. She said something that always stuck with me, that when you do go to have a difficult conversation with your partner, do not use the word you. Because if you immediately go, look, you're doing this, you're being a dickhead, you're acting like this, you immediately get defensive. So try and take the word you out of it and use a kinder, warmer language. And it makes you think, like you've really just got to sit back and think about the words that you're using. But just a piece that's always stuck with me was when Lisa said that, because it's hard and it's challenging.
If my wife's prickly and because, you know, she seems to be in a mood and I've had to work at this, because I would do the same thing. I would just get angry in the past. Be like, oh, this is an inconvenience.
And we've all done it.
What an inconvenience. I'm struggling and now this person I live with is struggling. I can't face, you know, I don't want to sort of face that down. I'm going to be angry if they come to me with that. But instead, reframing it in a way that they're struggling, you know, they are struggling. And automatically you have that compassion again, which lowers down the walls.
And I think that's exactly what I'm taking from this conversation, that we all know men and women are different, but actually, like, when I think of my husband or what you're saying, them leaning into work, doing more, that could be a trigger to go, something's not right here. Yeah. I always use this example in my house. If my husband sees me with the Hoover out and cleaning the house, step back. Like, Laura's not okay and she's taking it out in the house. That's my signal that I'm not okay.
I do that. We are the same person.
We are the same person. Yeah. Is it the control? like my family laugh. If I'm there cleaning.
I do that. Yeah. If I go back and I see the house is like upside down and I get like, oh God, fucking.
Take it out. But it's true. That's my signal to my husband. Yeah. Laura's not okay. Mm. Let her clean the house. Mm. That's what she needs to do. But the final thing I want to touch on before we wrap this up is kind of the piece, you know, where she was there, I was struggling, he's fine. I don't think it's possible to see your partner struggle. Like when you think of you and I, Matt, and the level we maybe struggled, for our partners to come out of that okay. Mm. Like if one of us is struggling, the other is struggling because it's not easy to see someone you love struggle so much. And I think that's another part that's not spoken about, that it's almost, if you're on the other end and your partner is deeply struggling, you have to be taken care of too. Mm-hmm. You can't fix it, first of all. All you can do is be there and listen. But you as a person are going to struggle too because, you know, it might be deeply traumatic. It might be lots of things. And I think, I don't know if that's making sense, but like you are actually both in it together.
Yeah, totally. And a thing that springs to mind is Jamie that we had on and he spoke about, we had this diagram about when two parents are underperforming, how it impacts a child. So it's like two negative parents equals negative child, two happy parents equals happy child, one happy parent, one negative.
Unregulated.
Right. So
you've got two unregulated parents, then that's detrimental to the raising of the children. Mm-hmm. But if you have...
But it's so true that you feed off that energy. And I don't know, from a personal, on our personal journey, my wife fed off my energy, which was negative. And it's, but you need to be able to confront it in a way that's kind and not belittling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it kind of comes back to what I say, and I get in trouble for this. Like my whole thing is around mine, mommy. Like I believe I'm the most important person in the family. Like if I'm happy, everyone's good. The next thing is like the relationship with my husband.
Mm.
And then it's the kids. And I don't mean that as in we don't care about their needs, but I can't be their mother. I can't be there for them. Like all of my children are neurodivergent. I have had to rewrite the whole rule book and go, I need to be okay.
Mm.
And that is the number one thing for me. And when I'm okay, they're okay. And then if I'm okay, well, then the relationship with my husband is
so
easier.
True.
And in society, we get in trouble for saying that. But I don't know how else to do this whole parenthood thing.
It's a false economy. If we're constantly giving, if we're constantly pouring for our cup, eventually it will be empty. We can't pour for it and everyone suffers. And this is one of the biggest reframings again with lots of people I speak to. Again, it goes back to, you know, the more we work on ourselves or the more we show up for ourselves, the more we show up for other people. And it's such a mindset shift, but we're so used to giving. We're so used to pouring from that cup as parents, particularly in the early years. There comes a point where we realize actually we've got to fill that cup back up. And I think someone gets healthy when they're sick of being sick. So it's sad that we have to experience that.
That is
moment.
So true. And I don't know if you correlate to that, Matt. Mm-hmm. I was so unwell that it was kind of the tipping point for me of I'm never, not that mental health is a choice. It's not. And I don't want anyone to think that, but my mental health is my number one priority in life now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And everything I do is to support it. And that's involved ditching the rules, letting go of pressure, cutting corners, doing it the way I need to. And I think the reason I'm now happy in motherhood is because I can't ever feel like that again. Like it literally almost killed me. And I don't know if you can relate to that now in your journey where from something so difficult can actually come something so, and I don't want to sound corny, but transformative, where you're like, no, like I am no longer doing this, this and this.
Totally. I've learned more about myself in the last 2 years doing this than any book or course or anything like that YouTube could ever teach me. And it's through that hardship that I realized I never want to get back to that state. And the coping mechanisms that I've put in place. Look, for example, now we have the summer holidays coming up and our daughter's going to be off for like 8 weeks. Me and my wife and I, we're really good at communicating now. It's like, okay, you go to the gym first in the morning, you have your time. I'll go and have my time. We'll flip the days. Because so many people put, again, our guest talking about this last week, the child on the pedestal and the child is this. And the focus on the relationship first.
I fundamentally agree. And I don't know why it's controversial for us to say that. It's you cannot mind someone else unless you're okay. Like
absolutely.
You can't.
Yeah.
What's your final point you're going to share? If you had advice for, I'm going to, will I ask you for advice for dad or mum? I'm going to ask you for advice. If there's a mother listening,
yeah,
so, what's your one piece of advice for her?
So if you feel like your partner has shut himself off from you, if you feel like he has gone quiet, if he's doing triathlons, if he's picking up new hobbies, whatever it might be. Yeah, if he's hoovering. Sometimes he might just need a little nudge because, again, the emotional vocabulary isn't there. So finding him or asking him a question that's open and raw and comes from a place of kindness rather than why are you angry all the time? Why are you not doing this? Why are you not doing that? Finding a way to understand more about your husband through a question like that, I think could be really, really beneficial.
Really good advice.
Without projecting your own biases on it. Because as we've said today, although we're very similar, we're also really different.
Yep.
And how we regulate our emotions and want to talk about them can feel really confronting as a man, just because we're still in the hardships of being our father's generation, but also this new generation. So we've got one foot here, we've got another foot there, and we're just trying to figure out what our roles are. And it can be really overwhelming for dads. It can be really confusing for them. So doing it and just coming from a place of love and just being able to listen.
And recognizing, as we said, we are the generation that are rewriting the rules. And that means there are no rules.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Rip that up. Yeah.
And what's your one piece of advice, Lawrence?
I guess this is a mindfulness exercise that I'll do. And I'll do it for myself. And if someone's listening, and they might find it useful. But what I'll do is because life is messy and family life is messy. And sometimes the messiness feels like it's raining down on us from all angles inside the house. And we can get very stuck in the reactivity of that present moment. It's very hard to have mental clarity. Our nervous system is upregulating. It can just feel a bit too much. So what I'll do is I'll try and drop out of that space mentally, and I'll have a conversation with my future self. Mm-hmm. So maybe me as an older, wiser 60-year-old looking back on this moment. And I'll just ask that person for advice. And what comes back, it's uncanny how often that deeper wisdom, that knowledge is already there. It's already within us. We just need to have a little exercise that takes us out of the mayhem of family life in the present moment. And the wisdom is in there. It's a guiding tool when those busy, crazy, hectic moments feel all too much in family life.
I love that.
Because I often talk about like writing a letter, imagining your kids are 18 and they're writing a letter describing you and their life. And what do they want? What do you want them to say about you? Like every time I do it, or I get one of my clients to do it, it gets you in the stomach because we're not writing about the stuff that we think is important. Like they're not going, oh, they brought us on this gorgeous holiday to Dubai or, you know, mommy or daddy always did everything perfect. It's kind of the stuff like, you know, mommy was happy. Mommy was always kind to us. Like it's the stuff that we often lose sight of and don't put our energy into. So I love that idea because it's taking us out of the chaos and goes, what actually matters here? Like, what are we trying to do? We're all trying to build resilient, happy children that go into adulthood and are ready to navigate life. Because as we know, life is hard and comes at you. And part of that, we had an amazing psychologist on this. You know, she was saying that is about building resilience. It's about not getting it right and, you know, only parenting well 30 to 50% of the time. So I love that.
Great.
I love that.
Thank you very much.
Guys, it has been a pleasure for our first official dad session.
I hope we've done the dads justice. I hope we have.
Ask everyone to go and check out their podcast, The Secret Life of Dads. Even if you don't listen to it, give it to your partners. And the lovely thing about this, Matt, is I think both of us are where we are because we actually had very similar experiences. I threw myself into this podcast into work and it sounds like that was part of what pulled you out of it as well. And I just think...
Absolutely.
I'm so glad I got to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
It's been so lovely.
Yeah, yeah. And thank you for the work that you're doing in this space. I think it's really important. But I think, you know, we're at the kind of forefront of trying to figure all this out.
Yeah. And we're trying.
We're trying.
Having the conversations.
But that bit as well, that's something, obviously, I've got to know Matt and we've just met. But what you've done with this podcast and what Matt has done in turning around the challenge into such a positive thing in life is shown the character of the man and it shows the character of you. And that's something I admire so much. So thank you for both of your work. And
this has been such a lovely episode. Can I join your gang? I'm in. Oh, thank you guys.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I am so glad that I asked Matthew and Lawrence to join me today because it's been a day since we recorded. And the key thing that I've been thinking about since we recorded the episode with them is, as women, if we try to do it all, if we try to work outside the home, if we try to be the provider for our family, if we try to do any of that stuff, we are made to believe we are not a quote unquote good mom. You know, there's no such thing as a good mom. And we feel this massive guilt because we're not there enough for our children. But speaking to Matthew and Lawrence yesterday, one of the key things I took from that is their dad fashions were around, am I doing enough for my family? Am I providing enough for my family? Am I doing enough as the sort of that male breadwinner type role? And as we were going through that conversation, and I kind of raised it during it, they never said, I feel guilty. They were talking about pressure and fear. And I just think it's a really, really interesting point for us to all reflect on, that why, as a society, are we putting this pressure on women and making them feel like they're doing too much and they're not at home enough if they are the person that is in that provider role for their family? And then for men, if they are maybe more in the nurturing role for their family, that there's this pressure that they're not doing enough and they're not providing enough. And it was just really, really interesting to see, as men and women, we can both find it hard and we can both feel pressure in different ways. But so much of that pressure is driven by the societal narrative of what does a good dad do and what does a good mum do? And I took so, so much from it. And I really, really hope that you did too. And if your partner has not listened to it, I would love for you to get your partner to listen to this episode, because Matthew and Lawrence are brilliant. They're amazing guys. And I am so glad that we had the opportunity to hear their perspective and to hear their dad fashions this week. Thank you for listening. If you found today's episode helpful, please hit the subscribe or follow button. But most importantly, please share with your friends. Because if you related to any of the topics on today's episode, I promise they will relate too. You can also leave me a review and a rating wherever you're listening. I'd really, really appreciate it. If you would like to avail of some additional resources, please visit my Instagram page, Mind Mommy Coaching, or join the village via the link in the description below. I hope you have a wonderful week, and remember, it's not selfish to mind mommy, it's essential. Mum Fashions is an Insanity Studios production. The head of production is Charlotte Mason, the head of digital is Ed Buckley, and the production assistant is Abby Sandler.